A sunny Monday afternoon here along Michigan Avenue, the Allstate Showcase Studio. I hope you'll squeeze some time in and listen to us, or you can, I would imagine, type. Most of you have your credit card memorized, so you don't need to look that up while you do your Cyber Monday shopping and listen to the Wintrust Business Lunch. I don't know if you're a big fan of TED Talks. Dr. Meg Jay has a TED Talk that is pretty interesting. She just has a book out called Super Normal, and it's about this idea of how many of us overcome childhood trauma and how it actually leads to things that are better for us down the road, creativity and things like that. So we'll kick that around the workplace. You know, there was a book out last year called Grit. I think it's the same sort of thing. But Dr. Meg Jay, a little bit later in the program. On Mondays, we start with the folks from Chicago Inno, Catherine Davis and Jim Dahlke are in the studio. Welcome to both of you. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Steve.
Thanksgiving was a success, I hope.
Yes.
Oh, good.
Success.
Yes. All the food was eaten.
Really?
Yes. Yeah, it was very good.
I'm still finishing up some of the food. Okay, so today's Cyber Monday. Friday was Black Friday. And it seems to me all of these things are sort of being melded in. I don't know if they are very distinguishable. So I was shopping on Black Friday because I like it. Mm-hmm. And there's this store I go to where they sell shower gels. And it's a great, you know, so I take a shower once a week so I can buy a year's supply. And I'm in line, and it's, you know, buy three, get three free. It's a slow line. I'm like 10 back. I'm like, this is crazy. I put it back on the shelf, went home, and got the same deal online. And I think you're seeing that, right?
100%. I mean, I think that as we've seen over the last several years, the in-person Black Friday shopping experience can get kind of intense and occasionally like weirdly violent. So I think a lot of shoppers, especially those of the millennial variety, are opting to do the shopping at home. And that's what you're seeing with some of the statistics from Black Friday shopping. Over $5 billion spent in online sales on Black Friday alone, which is up about 17% from last year.
And you said a lot of it came from the people were buying it on mobile devices.
$2 billion of that $5 billion was on mobile, so that's up, and really kind of showing you how people are spending around the holidays, right? And that's a number that you are going to imagine is only going to increase. So, as for every online retailer out there, it's clearly very important to have a strong mobile shopping experience.
Well, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Catherine.
Yeah, you know, I was out shopping on Black Friday, and you know, went to one store. Everything was picked over. Lines were horrible. So I decided to go home. And if I do buy something today, it will be online, probably on my phone. So.
Yeah. Well, that's what I did with my little experiment, because I looked online. They had the same deal. So I could just, with a couple of clicks in the mall, buy something that I didn't have to wait 20. And also, I got stuck in that Macy's line. You know, they had a credit card outage. So, yeah, I guess I didn't learn my lesson. Can't wait for next year.
Yikes. My conspiracy is that the deals aren't as good. So, like, the in-store deals are not as crazy, like, doorbustery as they used to be. Yeah,
I think I agree with you. Today, of course, is Cyber Monday. Well, later in the program, we'll talk to John Haber. He's the founder and CEO of Spend Management Experts, and we'll talk to him about how that's going today. Those are some of the numbers for Black Friday. Okay, we're all talking about Amazon and shopping for Amazon, but actually people are sort of shopping to Amazon too, right? There's a great piece in a newspaper out in Seattle, a columnist in the Seattle Times, about the different ways people are trying to lure the business, the second headquarters here or there.
Exactly, yeah. As we know, Chicago is fiercely competitive in attracting the Amazon second headquarters. And the Seattle Times actually took an interesting look. The columnist FOIA'd as many of the city proposals as he could, and he got a bunch back and sort of used his piece to kind of look at some of the weird details and kind of the reaches that some cities are going to kind of land Amazon. Chicago was kind of example number one in his story for sort of strange ways that the city is trying to entice Amazon. Chicago's offer to let Amazon pocket $1.32 billion in income taxes paid by its own workers. The columnist called it, quote, truly perverse.
So if I'm working at Amazon and my tax obligation is 10%, 5% of that, 20% of that might be going right back to my bosses.
Right. You're kicking basically your compensation, your salary back to your employer rather than money that would be otherwise used for, you know, roads and
right,
schools
right.
And things like that.
The sorts of things that are supposed to lure workers here. Instead, it would be going right back up to the man.
Right back up to your boss.
Okay. I guess, but if you're giving Amazon a tax break elsewhere, you could just, I mean, it's just the same money, but these are the dollars we can track. These are the dollars being raised in the engineer's office and then going up to the C-suite.
Exactly, yeah. And really, I mean, I think the point that they're making, and the Chicago Reader made the point, I think, even a couple weeks ago when they got a chance to look at this too, is that, I mean, really need to take a look at, you know, is this beneficial for the taxpayers of Chicago? You know,
right.
You know, instead of putting that money in a state that already has some financial issues, as we're clearly aware of, they're kicking that money back to Amazon rather than putting it into the, you know, roads and schools.
I don't care. I still want it. My favorite quote, though, is from a guy in Fresno who's, I don't know if he's in charge of spending or what, but they talked about how in Fresno, they would collect this money, and then Amazon would be on a public commission that could help decide how to spend the money, right? This big fund. So you could build parks, and the parks would say, brought to you by Amazon. And this guy's quote was, rather than the money disappearing into a civic black hole, Amazon would have a say in where it will go. Not for the fire department on the fringe of town, but to enhance their own investment in Fresno. So this guy's saying, rather than build a new fire station, we'll put Amazon's smile on a park, and that will make it all worthwhile.
Exactly. I mean, I think there are going to be a lot of negatives that come with Amazon being in your town. I mean, your traffic is going to be worse and everything else. They are sort of spinning this to say, hey, Amazon, you get to put your smiley logo on a fun park to let everyone remember, like, hey, Amazon's here doing good for the community.
That's Jim Dahlke, Catherine Davis here as well. We're going to take a break and come back and kick around a few more stories, and including, you know, we told you last week that Catherine had spent a lot of time in Ann Arbor looking on what's going on there. Jim Dahlke and Catherine Davis in the studio. Should read what they write and what they put together at Chicago Inno. Real quick, how do people follow the newsletter?
So ChicagoInno.com is where you can get all the stories that we write every day. And from that, you can check out The Beat and sign up for that. That's our everyday newsletter.
The Beat is pretty cool. And, you know, I'm just thinking in a way, not completely directly, but with the demise of DNA Info, you sort of is a sort of a niche site, I think we'll probably be getting a lot more attention.
We'll see. I mean, our coverage areas really didn't overlap that much. Actually, that was one of the biggest worries I had. Like, what if DNA Info starts to go really into startups? Because that was really a coverage area that they mostly avoided. So we didn't actually overlap too much.
Well, but I do think you cover sort of things that the broader media is not covering.
Yeah, a lot of local small business for sure.
Okay, so tell me about Cray.
Yeah, speaking of local small business. So
first, let's spell it. How do you spell it?
K-R-A.
Cray.
Cray.
Okay,
yes.
What is that?
So this is an organic Chicago-based sports drink startup. So you can think Gatorade, but healthier. You know, I think Gatorade, when you look at the nutrition label,
you don't want to do that.
It's a ton of calories in a Gatorade. So they really see an opportunity to kind of cut away a lot of those artificial ingredients, artificial flavors, and really kind of make a more simple juice drink.
Is there a competition for them to do that? Because, you know, I see people at my health club drinking homemade concoctions all the time, so I would think there'd be a great market for this.
100%. Yeah, I mean, I think there's a big market opportunity for them. They're in about 200 stores throughout the Midwest and the Mid-Atlantic now.
What's that five ingredient food bar?
RX bar,
right? So they started in health clubs and went huge. Are these guys going to sort of do the same path?
So they're kind of in boutique grocery right now, like Mariano's, Whole Foods, that kind of thing. And to really kind of get into bigger stores is something that they're certainly interested in wanting to do.
All right, we'll look for them. K-R-A, Cray. I would imagine there's an online presence too, right?
They do, yes.
It's Cyber Monday. Buy some for them. Okay. Catherine is still recovering from all her time in Ann Arbor, Michigan. And last week you sort of focused on them with a series of stories, right?
Yeah. So we looked at the innovation going on in Ann Arbor, Michigan. You know, they're anchored by the University of Michigan. So plenty of stuff going on there.
All right. Tell me about M-City. This really cool, because it sounds like this is a tool that all different car manufacturers can use.
Yes. So M-City, they have 32 acres of urban-like streets, highways, and traffic signals where major car companies like Ford, GM, Toyota can come and test their autonomous vehicles. So, you know, M-City opened in 2015, and so far about 15 car companies have tested their vehicles there.
And so it's just like a Weeble's pop-up town where they can put your car in and drive around.
Yeah, it's modeled after Ann Arbor. There's like little buildings that look like the downtown area there.
And what does M-City get out of it?
Well, they are also testing their own vehicles.
Okay.
So they're going to be deploying two shuttles out on the University of Michigan's campus. And those will be like the first driverless vehicles to actually be on roads in Ann Arbor.
How far away are they from that?
That's going to happen in the spring.
Oh, really?
This will be a one-year pilot program. And if it's successful, they plan to keep them there permanently.
You know, I don't know if it was with you guys or somewhere else talking about some numbers. Was it with driverless cars and how if you wait for the driverless cars to be perfect, you will cut down greatly on the number of deaths. But if you wait for them just to be pretty good over a 30-year period, you'll still greatly cut down. There'll be more people dying early you know, but still fewer than would be if there were just drivers, because most crashes are caused by driver error.
I truly believe that, like, in 100 years, we'll be looking back on, like, the driving era and thinking it's insane. I mean, it's so dangerous for humans to drive vehicles, and then allowing a computer to do it still takes a huge leap of faith to believe that a computer can pull it off. But if it can and when it will, it's going to drastically reduce vehicle fatalities.
Catherine, I was reading your stories, and I wonder if NASCAR will go away. You know, I wonder if, you know, driving like that will horse racing didn't.
I think it'll be even more popular, actually. Like, oh, look at these weirdos driving cars.
Look at the old folks. Let's go see Granddad. All right. That's the Catherine Davis, Jim Dahlke. Read more at Chicago Inno. Have a great weekend. We'll see you again next week. All right. Do you have your hands on the keyboard? Have you been shopping today? Retail Me Not said that they expect 56% of us will do some form of shopping on this Cyber Monday, and we'll spend more. The average is $205 compared to just $130 last year. That was what we spent on average. It's going to be 58% more this year, $205. And Adobe Insights tracks this. The last number I have from them was from 9 a.m., so a while ago, but they said by then there had been $840 million spent online on the Cyber Monday, which is an increase of 17% when you compare to the same time last year. John Haber watches all of this. He's the CEO and founder of Spend Management Experts, and he's going to explain for us all the do's and don'ts on the Cyber Monday. He joins us on a phone line. John, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Thanks for having me.
I bet. So are things sort of shaking out the way you would expect today?
Yeah, pretty much. More and more shoppers are moving online as opposed to brick and mortar, with sales up almost 20% so far this year on Cyber Monday and last week. It really started off last week, but it's a very busy day for online shopping.
You know, and you bring up a good point, because it seems to me that all of these days let's remember the spirit of Christmas. It's like all of these days are sort of losing their original meaning, because people are shopping online on Friday just like they are on Monday, and the Black Friday deals are kicking in on Tuesday rather than Friday. So it seems almost as if we're saddled still with these days as labeled, but maybe they don't quite function that way anymore.
Yeah, it's almost like an entire week of shopping. I know in some of the polls I was looking at, they were saying that actually the best deals were on Thursday, on Thanksgiving Day,
right,
online, is what some groups were saying. So it all kinds of runs together, because it just starts earlier and earlier. So some of the luster of Black Friday and Cyber Monday is getting spread out over the entire week.
My family went shopping on the Wednesday before Thanksgiving. I was working, and I went home, and I'm like, are you crazy? The big deals are coming. And they said, no, we got the same sale price that they're going to be offering on Friday. So I don't know that it matters as much. I also read something, and you tell me, but that the Cyber Monday deals tend to be less product specific and are more store wide specific. So a site that I use, in fact, is offering 15% off everything at their website rather than one particular order at 50 or 60% off. And I read that's because already retailers are looking to maybe sort of unload inventory, that it's not so much about specific items, but it's about store wide stuff. Any truth to that?
Yeah. There's a lot of truth to that. Yep, absolutely.
Explain that for me.
Well, you know, historically, you know, it's been more focused on sort of the big box items, you know, the televisions, the electronics, the furniture, but we're seeing more sort of broad discounting across the board from a lot of retailers, where you can get pretty much everything at a discount, as opposed to just sort of niche items that they're really trying to turn.
And I don't know if that is as effective. I mean, I want to find a big deal, not just an average deal. I mean, the site I go to was offering me, I think I just said, 15% off. That doesn't get me that excited. I'm not that motivated.
No, 15% isn't going to set the world on fire. You know, that's not, it's just not, that's not really that compelling. We're looking more for, you know, 40 to 50% off sales as opposed to 15% to push, you know, to push the sales and turn the inventory.
I know that you are involved in moving things around and giving advice and technology and things such as that. When it comes to that, it seems to me now that free shipping used to be a nice little bonus perk, but I think we kind of just expect that now. I mean, I'm less likely to buy something if the shipping isn't thrown in.
The consumer expects free shipping, and if the shipping isn't free, then you better be buying something that nobody else has. To charge a premium for shipping these days, when you've got the Amazons and the Walmarts and the Targets, as well as most other retailers offering free shipping. I mean, the reality is there's no such thing as free shipping.
Right.
Somebody's got to pay for it, but the consumer expects it, and the consumer is smarter these days. They're looking at the total landed cost, and so they're including shipping costs plus the cost of the goods when they're evaluating where they're going to buy.
Well,
and so that comes into play.
Tell me about that. I mean, obviously, there is no such thing as free shipping, and if I run a business, I'm not inclined to pay for it myself. I'm going to put it into the costs of the very stuff I'm selling, right? So maybe we're not getting much of a deal there at all.
For sure. You know, a lot of retailers try to put it in the cost of the goods that they're selling. But the problem is that there's so many different options on where you can buy most things. And so it's hard to bump up the price of the goods and subsidize the cost of the shipping, because you can go and compare a lot of different places. And if you start building in too much cost under the price of the goods, then they're going to buy from somewhere else.
I would imagine as well that this is the time of year when a lot of people who don't do a lot of purchasing online would fall victim to, well, even those of us who do a lot of purchasing online. I would imagine this is an especially risky time. We might be going to websites or little shops that we're not that familiar with, and could fall victim to fraud in one way or another.
For sure. With all the hacks that have been going on most recently, you know, Uber with, you know, 50 plus million, you know, people that have been hacked with their confidential information, it's a real concern, especially if you're giving your credit card information out. There's tons of fraud. I know just myself, I get a lot of sort of what I would call phishing emails,
right,
where I get a document that says, please pay this invoice now. And a lot of people fall victim to that. So fraud online is a massive problem. It's costing companies billions of dollars.
But it's costing them billions of dollars, but it doesn't seem to be costing them enthusiasm among their clients. Does that make, I mean, I don't think we're slowing down. All the numbers show that we're only speeding up. We're only buying more and more online.
No, it seems like people forget very easily what's, you know, the problems. It's almost, you know, it's the instant gratification of making the purchase, and then it's going to ship out today and you'll have it tomorrow.
Well, John, I'd like to follow that. I like to follow that little bug. I like to know where my box is going.
Yep, absolutely. You can track it. You can see, even with the UPS, you can see where the package is at almost all times.
Right.
You can see exactly when it's going to be delivered, and you can schedule it to be delivered to a lot of different remote delivery locations. So you can go pick it up if you don't want to wait for it to get to your house. There's a lot of different options.
All right, tell me a little bit about Spend Management Experts. What is it that you guys do?
We work with large shippers, and we help them optimize their supply chain in the areas of transportation, distribution, and fulfillment. So for a lot of the large retailers, we're actually helping them negotiate their contracts with UPS and FedEx. We're also helping them set up their distribution models, as well as doing audit work where we're making sure that they're getting billed correctly and helping them with freight payment as well.
You know, we talk about Amazon and online sales and stuff. This era, must be a huge boon to companies like FedEx and UPS. I mean, they must just be cleaning up.
Well, yes. From a volume standpoint, they are cleaning up. They're getting tremendous amounts of volume. However, the big increase is on residential deliveries for UPS and FedEx and the post office, and those are much less profitable than commercial deliveries. And so while the volume is increasing rapidly, the profit is much lower on the residential side just because there are less packages that are being delivered to a residence than there are to a commercial location. And the residential deliveries are more spread out than commercial deliveries.
Still,
so it's a lot of volume, but it's not as profitable as the commercial volume.
But still worth it for them.
Still worth it. I don't feel sorry for UPS and FedEx. They're making plenty of money.
John Haber, the founder and CEO of Spend Management Experts. It was great to talk to you. Hope we can do it again.
Thank you.
All right, dictionary.com is out with their word of the year, the word of 2017, and it is complicit. You know, that has a lot of political undertones to it, but their word is complicit. I wonder if we might make a better case for the word resilient. Dr. Meg Jay could do that, certainly. She is out with a book called Supernormal. Maybe you've seen her TED Talks or run into her on one of the talk shows or elsewhere, but she joins us now on a phone line. Meg, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Hi, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Well, Dr. Jay, I'm glad that you took the time to join us, too, because I have a complicated thought in my head, and I don't know if I'm going to be able to get it out correctly, but we'll get to that.
Ready.
I don't know. I'm going to test your skills, I think. But talk to me about the number of people who face childhood trauma in one way or another, and how, well, you know, I almost wonder if it can turn out to be a positive, a benefit, if it can make them more creative or stronger later in life. Is that crazy?
That's not crazy at all. So actually, 75% of us by the age of 20 experience some significant adversity, whether that's having an alcoholic parent in the home or a mentally ill sibling or a neighborhood bully or a domestic violence. And so I think a lot of people feel alienated or abnormal or different because of these adversities. But we also know that getting past these or overcoming these adversities, even though it's not easy, if we're able to do that, people can see themselves as stronger or courageous or brave. If you're willing to look at the resilience and not just the adversity.
How many of the 75% of us actually excel later, and what percentage of us are defeated by our childhood trauma?
Well, that's a $64,000 question. We can't put a number on it, and it really depends on what area we're looking in. So are we talking about excelling in love or at work or,
right,
you know,
right,
mental health, and at what age? But I think what that points to is that resilience is not a one and done, something you need to have by age 20, but it's really more of a lifelong struggle for a lot of people to create over time the lives as adults they wished they had had as kids, or to have things turn out better for them than the way they started.
Unfortunately, your phone line is not great, so I'm sorry if I interrupt you here. All right, so here's my crazy thought. If 75% of us are overcoming or having dealt during our childhood with some sort of childhood trauma, wouldn't there, and maybe this is what you're arguing, it seems to me like if you keep saying, if the victims of this are seen sort of as a minority or as an outlier, this doesn't happen to everyone, it only happened to me, that makes the injury greater. And I just wonder if there isn't value at some point to say, you know what, it's not great, but this is life. It's part of the human existence that this will happen. It was bad, but it's not overwhelming because it's just part of who we are and what we do. Does that make any sense at all?
Right. Absolutely. I do think that that's what helps people, is to realize they're not as alone as they think they are. Having adversity in your life doesn't make you abnormal, which a lot of people feel like, well, I'm not like other people because, you know, my mother was addicted to drugs, or
right,
I had a sibling who died. But if you put all the people together who've had some significant adversity, then people aren't even remotely as alone as they think they are.
I'm going to oversimplify it even further, and I don't mean to diminish any trauma. I truly don't. But as I'm talking to you about it, I kind of think of when one of my children was three and they fell and scraped their knee. If I, you know, fawn over them and say, oh, my God, how are you? This is terrible. Their reaction is going to be worse than if I say, ah, that's too bad. Okay, let's go to the park.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a fair comparison?
Well, I mean, obviously, it's not probably quite the right metaphor, right. But I know what you're saying, which is, I think, to both recognize that this is really hard, or this is really sad, or this is really painful, and that you can get through it.
Right.
That those can both be true.
Yeah, and really, Meg, some of my thoughts were being formed as I was talking to you, so I'm sure I'll get some nasty texts and emails. I didn't mean to diminish anything, but it's sort of an interest. I've wondered about that from time to time. If we worked more toward accepting the normalization of some behavior, if we wouldn't be better off overall and end up becoming super normal.
Well, right. I think it's one of the reasons I wrote the book is that I work with people behind closed doors one at a time. And most people feel alone with how they've struggled. And I think like what we've seen with the recent Me Too movement is the more we see that other people have been through similar experiences, we don't feel so crazy, we don't feel so alone, and we realize we're not alone in our struggle. And resilience really is a struggle. It's not, you know, an easy sort of bounce back moment.
Dr. Meg Jay, the name of the book is Supernormal. Great to talk to you today. Thanks very much.
You too, Steve.